Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen, coming to you from KHOI here in beautiful downtown Ames. I'm your host, Lana Noctical. My co-host, Donna Priskintis, is not here. So it's the Lana Kitchen today, but lots in store for us today. For instance, we have a guest. She's going to read the Wheatsfield Underwriter Statement.
Support comes from Wheatsfield Co-op, your full-service natural foods grocery in Ames. Community-owned and community-focused since 1974. Open daily, 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. Located downtown at 413 Northwestern, just off Main Street in Ames. Everyone can shop Wheatsfield Co-op.
The next full moon is coming up. The next full moon is March 5th. That's this coming Thursday. It's also called the Sap Moon, the Crow Moon, the Worm Moon, or Lenten Moon. So celebrate one of those. And it is also a Micro Moon of 2015. What is a Micro Moon, you might ask? A Micro Moon is a full moon that occurs when the moon is farthest from the Earth. We think the moon orbits in a circle, but it doesn't. The moon orbits the Earth in an elliptical path with one side of the path closer to Earth than the other. The point closest to the Earth is called the perigee. The farthest point is called the apogee. Work those two terms into your vocabulary this week, perigee and apogee. And the average distance between the two extreme points is 2,037,000 miles. Well, old wives' tales and folklore accounts suggest that the full moons and the micro moons affect human mental health and bring on natural disasters. Perhaps. But science has not found any evidence for such correlation. So celebrate the micro moon. It's going to be a full moon, but it'll be very micro-like, as in smaller than usual, on March 5th. So, I've been thinking about the concept of feeding the world. Well, can we really? I mean, everybody seems to be talking about that nowadays. This weekend is going to be the 2015 Iowa Ag Summit, where lots of presidential hopefuls are going to gather in Des Moines and talk about food issues. It's funny how presidential hopefuls kind of gather in Iowa. Here we go again, folks. Here we go again. So where exactly does our food come from? How about if lots of us grow it ourselves? Recently, there was a program put on by Practical Farmers of Iowa, and come to find out that they celebrated the fact that food actually grows on trees. Later on in this program, we'll talk to Sean Brown, a man who's planting fruit trees. He's got a lot to say about fruit trees. And in the kitchen with me today is Liz Colby. She is from the Practical Farmers of Iowa. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Liz.
Sure, I'll tell you about myself and also introduce Practical Farmers of Iowa. I know you've talked about them before, but I don't know if you've had a PFI staffer in here, so it might be the first time for us.
Well, you're more than welcome.
I'm the horticulture coordinator at Practical Farmers of Iowa. We're a nonprofit based here in Ames, and we work with farmers all across the state. We have about 2,800 members. And our mission is strengthening farms and communities through farmer-led investigation and information sharing. And that takes a variety of forms and with a variety of farmers. Of course, I work with fruit and vegetable growers, but we were started by field crop farmers doing on-farm research and have since included many livestock farmers, fruit and vegetables, and have a strong beginning farmers program as well. And I was actually just browsing through our website, looking back at some of Dick Thompson's work, who was our founder. And one thing he said that I think fits with feeding the world is that our first priority is to be stewards of the land, not to feed the world. So,
sounds good to me.
Thought I'd offer that to you.
Sounds good to me. This, we have to learn how to take care of our space and do what we can do to make our own spaces, our own farms, our own gardens be as wonderful as possible. And it sounds like we can learn how to do that. We can learn how to farm gently, sustainably, organically, biologically. Tell me a little bit about this. There was an orcharding workshop called Successful Biological Orcharding. Why did you decide to have a orcharding workshop in Practical Farmers of Iowa?
At our annual conference this year, which was in late January, we got a lot of feedback on our evaluations that said we would love to have more orcharding, fruit tree, berry opportunities for learning through Practical Farmers of Iowa. We have about 100 events every year, and apparently not enough of those were about fruit trees and orchards and berries. So we had a presenter for February back out, sort of last minute, had about a month to plan something new, looked at those evaluations, and somebody said Michael Phillips, somebody else said Michael Phillips, somebody else said Michael Phillips, and I thought, well, I guess I'll call Michael Phillips.
Who in the world is Michael Phillips? I noticed he was the person that was the main speaker, was the speaker at the Successful Biological Orcharding Workshop.
The speaker was Michael Phillips, and he came from New Hampshire. He has a farm there, an orchard called Lost Nation Orchard, and he's written a few books, one with his wife Nancy called The Herbalist's Way. They do a lot of their own medicines and a lot of essential oils and things like that. He also has a book called The Holistic Orchard, Tree Fruits and Berries, The Biological Way. And that book was published in 2012, and it has an accompanying DVD, which is, I think, about 4 hours long. And it won several awards, including, I think, the Horticultural Society's Book of the Year Award. And I called him, and he said he'd be happy to do it. He said, I'm not sure if we can get enough people to come. I opened up the workshop for attendees, and within a week, I had 80, and I was excited and terrified. closed the RSVP list and had a waiting list growing, and at the end, we just said, let's have everybody come, and ended up with 102 people in a pretty tight space, but we had a good time.
So there are people that were excited about this. I bet there was a lot of sharing of knowledge that happened there, because certainly, although Michael Phillips was probably brimming full of things that he knew, there are people here in Iowa that are orcharding and doing things with fruits and berries. How exciting.
Absolutely, and they were coming out of the woods, you might say.
The woods!
to be at this workshop. We actually had some folks join PFI just to attend the workshop. They didn't have to be a member to join, and we offered it free for members and $30 if you weren't a member. And they said, well, if you're bringing Michael Phillips, we want to be part of this no matter what. So we had a lot of new members there and longtime members. We rely on our membership to do a lot of our farmer-to-farmer knowledge sharing and field days, workshops, conference sessions, and farminars. But we also like to bring in folks from the outside to put on these sort of day-long workshops and really get a good insurgent, you know, new vein of knowledge coming in to the state for all of our farmers. And
insurgent, good word, yeah. Insurgent knowledge.
A good way to use insurgency,
yeah.
Certainly. And he was fantastic. The workshop was pretty much all day, 8:30 to 4, and I had a lot of people on the evaluation say that it was too short.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Needed more.
So we'll
try and have him back sometime.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. And people are growing fruit trees probably not just because they're pretty, not just because they're a good idea. They're a source of really good food. In my study of Iowa history, there used to be a lot of apples, a lot of things grown here, and we've sort of gotten out of the practice of that. There's a few orchards around, but evidently fruit can grow here quite well.
Yeah, I've done a little bit of digging into the agricultural historical census data over the years, and Iowa in the 1910s and 20s was the third largest producer of apples in the country, and that is not the case anymore, but fresh market apples have been, growing again in Iowa for years, and there's a lot more interest in bitter apples for cider as well.
Oh, bitter apples for cider. So regular apple, well, I suppose you can make apple cider out of anything, but to make certain kinds of cider, just like in grapes, probably you need certain kinds of apples.
Sure, you can make a fresh juice cider that's mm-hmm. sweet with more of a fresh apple, but a hard cider, folks prefer some different varieties of apples that you wouldn't want to eat fresh.
Ah, and what amazes me about people that enjoy orcharding, enjoy interacting with trees and long-term brambleberry bushes and things like that, it really is a long-term sort of thing. I'm used to planting things every spring, and if something doesn't work, well, I just plow it under and plant another seed. To think far enough ahead, to plan, to know how trees work, that's a wonderful thing to know.
It is, and I'm right there with you. I want to look at something and know if I've killed it. I don't want to wait till next year to find out. So these people have a special skill, and I hope I can connect them with each other and not rely on me and you to give them any advice.
Right. We'll just say, grow those cider apples, and we'll enjoy them. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Do you have any feeling about, well, not just fruit growers, but there are other PFI growers that are growing things for us to eat. Can we feed ourselves by our friends and neighbors, by our small farmers in the area growing things for us? Do we really need to depend on big ag to feed us?
Well, the ultimate answer to that question, I don't know the ultimate answer to that question, but we certainly can feed ourselves substantially. And I shouldn't talk about my thesis research, so I won't.
Thesis. Go ahead. Tell us.
Well, I did do, as part of my thesis at Ohio State, did a GIS, Geographic Information Systems analysis of the, potential for local food in Northeast Ohio, and found during that we certainly, have enough land available if we farmed it differently to feed a lot of people. My estimation for this research was between about 20 million and 30 million in a 17-county region that I was looking at in Ohio, where they have pretty good soils like Iowa and a lot of diverse agriculture. But, that hasn't been published in the scientific literature yet, so take that with a grain of salt. But even in around Iowa, what we have right now available can definitely feed a lot of people. And, some of the conventional farmers that have been doing corn and soybeans for a long time, and, you always hear, well, that goes to animal feed, that goes to ethanol, and that's true. But more and more of them are getting interested in small grains. There are some new custom mills that are popping up around the state. So I feel, really positive that the landscape might look a little different, but a lot of these beginning farmers, I call them land-limited beginners, they're coming in and needing to capture more of that dollar that they're producing. So they're, going to look for more direct markets and selling actual food directly to the consumers or through sort of a short link of producer to consumer.
Tell us a little bit more about, you mentioned beginning farms. I think that would be hard getting land with land prices being what they are. Coming out of school as a young person with heaven knows how much school debt, how in the world can young farmers get started? Tell us a little bit about PFI's beginning farmer assistant that helps.
Sure. Well, we have a few different beginning farmer programs. Sort of our most prominent one is the Savings Incentive Program, and we have I think about 50 or 100 people enrolled in that currently. And
good.
Matches these beginning farmers with a mentor through PFI that is doing a kind of agriculture that they'd be interested in trying. And they work on a business plan with Practical Farmers of Iowa, some financial advisors, and their mentor. And then we provide a savings match to them once they complete this two-year program. It's very popular, and about half of those folks are including fruits and vegetables as part of their farming operation. And the reason for that is you can make more money per acre doing fruits and vegetables than you can with conventional crops, and it's a lower capital investment up front to get started in fruits and vegetables. You don't need all the equipment you would need for livestock or for field crops. So we're also seeing farmers that are coming back to farm with their parents. They're now sharing space.
Uh-huh.
And so they can't expand their row crops any more than they already are, but they'd like to add something to diversify their income streams, and it might be fruits and vegetables. And even, farmers that are on their own, I think, I could probably make some money growing watermelons or growing sweet corn or popcorn. And so they're trying something a little different on a few acres, too.
That's good. And so that actually you start thinking about the land a little differently when you're growing fruits and vegetables than you would corn, soybeans, something for ethanol. It's a different way to look at the land. So that's good. That's good. I'm glad PFI is providing impetus to change the way that we think about food and our food systems. That's good. How can we encourage consumers to support these young growers and all of farmers that want to do the right thing when it comes to growing food. It takes a while. We were talking about the timing of fruit trees. It also takes a while to recoup an investment when you're a farmer. When you put something in the ground, it's a while before things come out. And to make any money on it, you have to sell it to somebody.
The best way to support a farmer or a beginning farmer either in your area is to buy food from them at a price that helps them earn a living wage. A great way to do that for a lot of farmers is to purchase a CSA share from them. Many of them still have CSA shares available for this year. And the reason that's so helpful to them is that it provides them a source of income at a time when they don't have anything to harvest in their field. You pay them at the beginning of the season for a box of food every week or every other week throughout the growing season.
Yeah, CSA, that stands for Community Supported Agriculture. This model has been around for a while, and there are slightly different ways to do it, but mainly you are paying a farmer up ahead for vegetables delivered throughout the season, or meat, or whatever the farmer is doing. Yes.
Yeah, or eggs or milk, and there are even winter CSA shares if you look for them. There's several offered in Ames, and we have a list of PFI member CSAs on our blog on our website, so you can certainly go there and find it. It's also linked to our Facebook page.
Okay. Mention your contact information.
Oh, our website is practicalfarmers.org.
Good. And so you can look for the CSA list there.
Hopefully it's not that hard to find.
No, hardly. Hardly. Good. Great.
The Leopold Center also has a great CSA publication that they just updated for 2015. We have about 40 member CSAs listed. They have 85 CSAs listed. Most of those are also members of Practical Farmers of Iowa. Their list also includes meat CSAs, eggs, some more aggregated CSAs, I guess you would say. Our list was constructed a little differently, and it's since I was just doing it, I said, well, if you want to be on this list, send me an email. And so we don't have as many people on right now, but eventually we're going to grow that list and find them all.
Good. So think about food coming directly from a farmer. Yes, that is where the food starts anyway, so that if you can connect up with the farmer directly, that's a good idea. And we are in Iowa. You can't be all that far from a farmer. So contact PFI, contact Liz, and she'll kind of help you along there.
Sure. You could also go to our underwriter, Wheatsfield Cooperative. They support a lot of local producers in the Ames-Des Moines area as well, and other local co-op grocery stores around the state.
Yes. Yes. Very good. You are listening to KHOI. 89.1. We're talking to Liz Colby about PFI, about local food, and we'll be talking about fruit trees a little bit more coming up. Go to KHOIFM.org. Support this station. You can support this station by going to that website and punching on the donate button. This is a volunteer-based community radio station. Welcome back. You're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We've been talking about growing food in Iowa with Liz Colby of the Practical Farmers of Iowa. And we've also been talking about a recent fruit tree growers workshop sponsored by PFI. I had the good fortune to talk to Sean Brown, a local grower who attended the workshop. Here in the kitchen today with me is a person that knows a lot about trees and apples and things like that. Sean Brown, welcome to the Donna Lana Kitchen.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
So, tell me about your farm and tell me about how you relate to apples.
Well, my farm is just a couple acre piece of lot or land that we bought last year, actually, and it was a kind of a dream of mine to have a tree nursery, not too much an apple nursery, but anyway, we ended up planting last year 150 apples. About they're 5-6 foot tall trees already, so we're hoping to have a little bit of cropping this year on them.
Oh, good. And where is your farm?
It's in Radcliffe.
Radcliffe. And yeah. And does your farm have a proud name already?
Yeah, it's my wife's Becky, and so it's Seebeck. I'm Sean, so we took our first three letters in Seebeck Orchards.
It's good. Do you grow anything else on your farm?
Well, I'm playing with raspberries, and we'll see how they go. So far, I planted some a few years ago, and they're producing well, so I bought enough to do another 100-foot row this year to see if that's going to be something that works well with the orchard.
Why do you enjoy farming? You could be doing anything. Why farming?
Well, you know, right now this is a hobby of mine, and hopefully it turns into something more. We'll see how it shakes out. But it's just, I know, it just makes me content. It's something that just calms me down, and it breaks away the day.
And we're glad that people do like to farm because we all like to eat around here. You attended a recent Practical Farmers of Iowa orcharding workshop a couple weeks ago. What did you learn at that workshop?
Yeah, that was a Michael Phillips workshop, and he's probably one of the foremost authors on holistic management of apple orcharding.
Now, explain what that is.
Yeah, holistic is a whole, it's a fully encompassing, a whole approach to orcharding. It's kind of a, this word biodynamic, meaning everything from the farm to the farm. You're not bringing in outside sources to do, when you're spraying your apples, for instance, apples a lot of times need extra calcium, so the apples produce a nice skin or store well. So you would use like a plant like a comfrey or nettles or something, and you can soak those in water to leach out the calcium and then spray that on rather than buying a calcium substitute.
In other words, nature is doing things already to make trees grow, and you're learning how to work with that.
Yeah, a lot of times they call it companion planting, and that works really well. So companion plants could be either something that that disrupts insects, or it's an insectary for insects that would pollinate your trees. So it works. It's very beneficial.
So you're trying to understand the whole system.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure it out. I mean, I believe everything in nature tends to work as a whole. So I guess that maybe that's where that holistic approach comes from. But so if we work with nature rather than trying to fight nature or try to reinvent nature, maybe things will just go better for me.
Why fight it when you can work with it? That sounds good. You and I were talking about permaculture before. I have a little bit of experience. That system has always fascinated me, the permaculture, the idea of permanent agriculture or permanent making us part of the permanent system and feeding ourselves and living ourselves in that system. So how did you connect up with permaculture, and why did you decide to go this route?
Well, permaculture, I only learned about permaculture about 4 or 5 years ago. And the way I found out about it is I tried not to spray anything harmful even then, but I used to use Roundup, and then I discovered that Monsanto actually patented Roundup as an antibiotic, could be used in an antibiotic. Then I started researching that further. I thought it was a very benign chemical, and it turned out it's in our water, in our food. We find it in breast milk now. So it's as I researched that more, then I start learning about permaculture, which is a very interesting system where permanent agriculture. It's food forests is a name they would use in permaculture. It would be earth care, the first thing you would do in permaculture, people care, and then share the abundance. And sharing the abundance is not necessarily giving it away, but it's sharing. It's giving back and forth. You know, it's harmony with everybody else around you. So that's how I got into permaculture. And actually, that's what led me into apple trees is I always wanted to grow landscape trees. And then when I learned about permaculture, I learned about food foresting. And I thought, well, there we go. I can have my trees and I can have food, too. I like apples and everything seemed to work. Just kind of fell in place at that point.
That's a good idea. Food forest. Yeah. And part of that food forest is the fact that if you look out in a forest, it seems to be getting along pretty well without a whole lot of our intervention and chopping and cutting. And what sort of things did you learn at that workshop about maintaining a food forest?
Yeah, forest is an interesting place. You know, we don't have elves out there spraying fertilizers. So, things grow pretty big and pretty lush. So, as far as I'm concerned with the apples, and what I've learned at the workshop is we have what they call the forest edge, and that's where your brambles, your berries, your trees, your fruit trees, and your understory trees grow there. Your overstory trees would be your big pines and stuff, and then your understory trees would be your apple trees and your bramble berries and stuff like that. So what happens, you have the grasses, the savannas, and your forest encroaches on your savanna by dropping branches and small ramial wood chips and stuff like that break down to a duff layer, and then that duff layer gets broken down by funguses, myceliums, and those myceliums have a symbiotic relationship with the trees and the roots of about 90% of the plants that we have.
Oh, so there's always this dynamic thing going on, it sounds like. The trees are growing into the savanna, and actually the savanna is trying to hang on to itself, but it sounds like there's something pretty powerful called the mycelium, the fungus. There's a lot of stuff going on that we don't even see.
Yeah, we're learning a lot about mycelium. It's growing. The information base on mycelium's fungal networks are growing. It's our largest organism on Earth. Up in the Olympic Peninsula, actually, has about a 3,000 square mile single organism, and it's a big giant mycelium.
You said 3,000?
I believe that's the number I heard, 3,000 square miles, a single organism.
So we're not here alone.
Oh, absolutely not. A handful of healthy soil is about, in the mycelium alone, if you took a handful of just the top layer of soil, you should have about 27 miles of mycelium root or hyphae. They stretch it out. So there's a crazy amount of life in a handful of soil.
So are there ways that you can use this information to establish a new orchard? You are putting in a new tree. You're not doing it in a forest. You are doing it in a piece of ground, an acre, you said.
Yeah, well, what this was in grass the whole time. So what I did the year before is I took a bunch of wood chips, put them down on the ground, and let the ground mellow and grow some. There's always mycelium in any dirt we get to, and there's bacteria in any dirt we get to. And a garden, if I was growing vegetables, I would want more bacteria. Actually a 1-to-1 ratio of bacteria to mycelium. But in a forest can have 100 times fungal to bacterial in weight. If you were to take them all out and weigh them both, that's how it would go. So I need to produce more of a fungal network to grow trees.
Oh, and how do you do that? You use a term called ramial. That's R-A-M-I-A-L, ramial wood chips?
Yeah. What that is it's any wood chip that's about 2.5 inches in diameter and smaller, and you would chip that up and put it on the ground, creating a lot of surface. So,
surface.
Yeah, surface is the name of the game there. That way the bacteria go after the sugars in the wood, and the fungus goes after the minerals, your calcium or your phosphorus, magnesium, copper, any selenium or anything like that. And the way it works, it makes a symbiotic relationship with the plant root. And the way this works is a mycelium cannot produce any carbohydrates. It's not green. It has no photosynthesis. So what it does it'll exchange these minerals for sugars, for carbohydrates. And two-thirds of the plant sugars that are produced are exchanged in this fashion for minerals and or nitrogens and stuff with the bacteria. So it's very it's much more of a the earth is – it's not something just to hold the roots, but actually that's where all the life is. I would say two-thirds of the life of anything we see on top of the ground or more.
So there's amazing give and take. There's the stuff that we don't see under the ground. There's a tree, and the tree is working, pumping things down while the – while the mycelium are giving the tree.
Yeah.
It sounds like a win-win for both things there.
It's quite interesting. So, you know, we hear about the xylem, which pulls water and stuff up from the tree, but we have the phylum that actually is always just stuff going back to the ground through root exudates. And root exudates is we can actually – it pulses the soil to change its rhizome sphere. There's a sphere around the root rhizome, and that's where most all your life exists. There's a crazy amount of bacterial and fungal life right there.
So that's got to be one of the reasons you like trees and you like the concept of food forest. It sounds way too fun to not want to play with it a little bit.
Yeah, you know, this. I'm growing into the dirt more so than the trees. I mean, I think that I'm being sucked down myself. So,
wonderful. Yeah. Tell me about the kind of things you're planting. And you have a relatively small space. So what sort of things and what sort of decisions do you make for what to put into that small space?
What I'm planting is very, what they call fully dwarfed trees. You use a rootstock. On apple trees, all apple trees, well, you could plant it from a seed, but you never know what you're going to get. But all apple trees that we know of a variety are taken from a living tree. You cut one of the branch tips off. It's called a scion. And you would plant it to a known rootstock. And rootstocks have different behaviors. They might have disease resistance, cold hardiness, and they have a dwarfing effect. Or they could be full size. I chose a fully dwarfing, cold hardy and then rust-resistant, canker-resistant type of a rootstock. And my main rootstock's a B9 rootstock, which there's gobs of rootstocks. So when you plant these on there, this tree will never reach about 30% of its parent height. So my trees will never grow much over 8.5 feet in height, which is referred to as a pedestrian orchard.
Pedestrian as in walk through it orchard.
Yeah, walk by, pick the apple off the top of the tree with, you know, never even having to get on a little step stool even.
That sounds extremely handy. A good opportunity to manage a food forest. One could just go harvest and forage. That's a good idea. But the idea of planning ahead is really good. Talk about different varieties you are planning for.
Well, the varieties I planted, off the top of my head, of course, Honeycrisp, because everybody loves Honeycrisp, and my wife's favorite, Granny Smith, so had to get some of those in there. I got Sweet 16, Cortland's, Braeburn's, Arkansas Black. Some of these are very good non-browning apples, you know, especially if you cut them with a ceramic knife. So some of these apples have very good non-browning characteristics already, if you want to use them in a salad or, say, Candy Crisp, Snappy Mac, improved Macintosh varieties. So I think I have about 12 variety of apples right now. And so my goal now is I'm starting to graft more. I think I'll be grafting about 500 rootstocks this year and trading them off with other friends of mine and trying to get them to grow their own little food forest.
Oh, very good. Any suggestions is people that have small spaces of their own. Maybe they have a backyard. What are some other tricks about growing in a small space?
Yeah, small space gardening is nothing new. You know, like Versailles or somewhere, you go over there and it was been grown like this for back even in the Roman days. They would grow these type of small space apples inside the garden gates, and they just didn't have the land to produce a big giant tree. So what you would do is you would pick one of these dwarfing fruit stocks, a dwarf tree, and then a Belgian fence would be a good way of going about doing...
Yes, a Belgian fence?
Yeah, Belgian fence. There's different types of fencing that you can do with these trees, but a Belgian fence would be planted every 18 inches. You would head the tree off about maybe a foot off the ground, and you would turn it into a V, and then the V's would grow in between each other at 45 degrees. So every 18 inches, you have a V, and so it looks like diamonds once you grow this up. And you may grow 15, 20, 30 trees in a 30, 40-foot long space.
So you're talking about making a fence out of the trees.
Yes. Yeah. Whoa. Usually you would grow it against a fence, and that way you can have some protection against wind. If you grow it against a building, you can actually get season extension. That way you don't get, you can hold the heat a little longer. You're more protected from the elements. So that's a good way of doing it. But this Belgian fence is another nice thing about the Belgian fence, and you have these little 18-inch squares, essentially, and you can have a different variety planted every 18 inches. So that way you can have, you might have 15 or 20 different apple trees out grown in a 50, 30, 40, 50-foot fence row. And then it's only a foot, it's only about 2 feet deep.
Well, how do you keep the trees from going their own way?
That is kind of fun. That's the fun part of it, actually. You'll take bamboo or a piece of metal or just wire. Some people just put an eye hook against the fence and pull wire, like just regular fence wire on it, and then they'll just train the tree to it. You'll just use zip ties or a twisty tie or whatever, some of that green landscape plastic that you see them tie the trees back with. So you'll just train the tree to those bamboos that were preset at the 45-degree marks, and you can look it up on the internet too. Look up Belgian fence, and I think you'll be taken with it. It's kind of, once you see it, you have to have it.
Oh, what a nice way to fuss with your trees. You can actually make them, you turn them into sculpture.
You know, these trees aren't that much maintenance. It's not like you plant it and forget it, but a lot of times they'll prune these trees once. Some people prune them twice a year. Summer solstice seems to be a good time to prune an apple tree. It's well after flower set and bud set, and it's early enough still to produce flowers for the next year.
Oh, okay, yeah. Summer solstice. Okay, yeah. Very good. And this fence that you were talking about, is it also called espalier, or is that a different
espalier
thing?
Espalier is a Belgian fence is a style of espalier.
Oh, okay.
Espalier, a lot of times you'll see what they call a horizontal cordons, where they grow them straight out. Espalier means to, like, rest your shoulders.
Yeah,
so if you had your arms hanging out and you're resting them on a wire or a trellis, yes. So
that's what that means.
Yeah, so most espaliers you would see would be grown up about 2 feet tall, and then they would head the tree off. And then the reason you head it off is you're trying to get a very symmetrical branching coming off the left and right side. And then you'd let the third branch grow straight up again. And about every foot apart, you would do another row of espalier, another horizontal cordons. So you could do 3 is traditional, 5. Some people, I've seen them, 15 layers of it. You can grow it right up the fence wall. You can also do horizontal cordons where they grow straight up and they're very colanderized.
A tall, skinny tree.
Very tall, skinny tree.
And these trees all produce fruit.
Actually, they produce fruit quicker because when you bend a branch down from growing straight up, you have that auxin in the very tip, the apical dominance of the tree, wants to just grow straight up, be very vigorous. So if you tend and bend some of the branches down to the horizontal, even once you get past 40, even past 60 degrees, but past 45 degrees, that auxin hormone that inhibits growth doesn't quite make it there anymore, and then it tends to go into, it thinks it's an older tree. If you think about a young tree, they're growing straight up, and as they get older, the bottom branches start growing out to get to the sun. Well, once they start growing out, then they start fruiting. So if you bend them down ahead of time, it promotes fruiting years ahead of what it would naturally produce on its own. So you can literally have trees cropping within 2 to 3 years versus 5 to 15.
This is fascinating. We can actually interact with fruit trees and help them along a little bit. I hope they appreciate your help. It sounds like you have a good relationship with them. Do you plan on selling your fruit here?
Well, I hope to sell it. I got so much fruit there, I definitely can't eat it all. So I plan on first this year I'll be sharing with neighbors and friends, and again, just trading produce for produce. And then by next year, hopefully I have enough crop and I can get out there to the farmer's market. And my wife's pretty excited about sitting down there, reading her book, and talking to people. So,
oh, nothing's more fun than talking to people at a farmer's market, no matter what. Working with trees, working with nature, seems like an awfully fun thing to do. Do you have anything else to say about permaculture?
Permaculture is is first I thought it was a hippie thing, and I wasn't so interested in it. But the more I learn about it, it's a very practical way of producing food and farming. It's not so much of a monoculture. And now when we walk out into a forest, it's not a monoculture anyway. But if you really think about it, you may not be able to plant as much as one single crop, but you could have trees growing, and then you can, and what they call alley cropping. You can plant your alley crop in between, say, 40-foot wide rows of trees. You can have your smaller apple trees under, say, chestnut trees. And if you look at the system, I believe it was Jack Russell back in, he used to work for the USDA back in the 20s. He wrote a book.
It's a Russell Tree book. I can't remember his first name. Yes.
I can't remember the exact name of it, but I believe he was an agronomist for the USDA. Mm-hmm. And anyway, I read that book, and it made a lot of sense. You may not get as much harvest out of any single variety. You're only getting 75% of one variety and 75% of another, but when you look at it as a whole, you're getting much more product than you could ever have produced off of a single product. So, and plus, if you did have a bad year on one thing, the other one tends to have a better year. So it seems like a very good system.
Right. Are you planning to make these, they call them guilds or gatherings, or groups of plants?
Yeah.
Are you planning on integrating things into your...
Yeah, guilding is definitely something that you would learn in permaculture. So what I've planted is a comfrey. Or comfrey is a... something that goes all the way down. It has a really deep taproot, and it goes down to your hard pan if you have one. But what it's doing is it's trying to pull calcium up. That it's a dynamic accumulator for calcium. It pulls up calcium where nettles would pull up potassium. And so you use these different plants. So if you have a – if you really think about it, if you go out in your yard and you see dandelions, which is another dynamic accumulator, you watch them grow up, and then once they move, they don't come back to that area. Well, they actually it's called bioremediation. They fixed whatever was – and it would be calcium in that area too. They didn't have enough calcium on the surface. So when those leaves die, it recalcifies that soil, and then that dandelion moves to a new spot to recalcium. And that's how we see, like, when we start with bare soil, we get weeds, then we get grasses. Grasses turn into brambles and small bushes. Bushes turn into small trees. Small trees turn into big trees. And then we have forests. So everything wants to go from desert to forest if we were to leave things alone.
Thanks for sharing what you know. And I can't wait to see what your orchard turns into. We've been talking to Sean Brown. He started a great project called the Seebeck Orchard in Radcliffe. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. This is KHOI Radio. So you can tell by that little bit of audio you just heard, there's people right here in Iowa that have a whole lot to say about growing things. Sean Brown is really excited about orchards and growing things. And yes, everyone can do this because everyone is excited about something. I'm glad some people like to grow apples. I'm glad some people like to grow other kinds of fruits and brambles. Sounds like a wonderful project. And that interest in fruit was recently addressed by the fact that PFI sponsored a workshop on fruit growing. And Liz Colby has said, is here with me in the studio and says that there's lots of other workshops in the planning stages for this coming year. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. Well, Practical Farmers of Iowa does over 100 events every year, and more of those are going to be focused on trees because there is a huge growing interest in fruit trees and berries. But we do a lot of other types of workshops, farminars, field days, annual conference sessions also. So there's things for people with conventional field crops, with organic field crops. If you're thinking about anything in between, if you've got grazing livestock, if you've got other types of livestock, chickens, hogs, cattle, dairy, and all the fruits and vegetables you can imagine. And if you're interested in those, you should contact me. Tonight we have a farminar, which is a farmer-led webinar. It's at 7 p.m.
This happens online.
Online, yes.
Online.
In the winter, we just decide that we're all going to sit in our living rooms and gather rather than going places so often. So we have farminars every week on Tuesdays at 7 p.m. Gather online. You can go to the Practical Farmers of Iowa website, practicalfarmers.org, and find the information there. It's also on Facebook. They are free to attend. online. They're also all archived and available on our website as audio recordings with the presentations. Tonight is about marketing your small produce operation, and it's with three farmers, Gene Gage, Tyler Magnuson, and Kate Coffey, and they are all PFI members, and Gene serves as the mentor to the other two. So it's beginners and experienced folks together. Just going to say a few more things about some more beginning farmer programs we have. One is called Labor for Learning, and that matches beginners with a PFI mentor, and they work on their farm and are paid, to do that. And it's sort of more than a job in that case, and that's been really successful. We also are relaunching our Find a Farmer website, new and improved. If you have land and you're looking for someone to farm it, or if you're looking for land, you should check out that website. The new version will be up soon. We're also working on our 2015 field day season, and we'll have 30 to 40 field days around the state. We try and get them really spread out all over the place, and the field day guide will be ready mid-May. You can find it online, or you can call the office, and we'll mail you a copy. We also have some plays coming up. We commissioned a play called Map of My Kingdom from Mary Swander, and the play is about farmland transition, which is a very important issue for Iowa. A lot of the farmland is turning over. More of it is owned by, elderly people, and their children and their families, need some help figuring out how to make that transition. So there's plays coming up in Charles City, in Columbus Junction, and in Dubuque, and you can check those out on our website as well.
That's wonderful. PFI has a lot of good information. As you heard from the interview with Sean Brown, there are a lot of people that have good information, and PFI is a good place to go and kind of gather all of this stuff together. Thank you for being in the studio with us today, Liz.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Great. A few weeks ago, I played a tune on this program. We were experiencing winter at the time, and as I look out of the window today, we are still experiencing winter. Although it's the 1st of March, it looks like it's going to be one of those marches that starts very lionish. We hope it ends very lambish, start in like a lion, out like a lamb. Hope that works this way. But I often put this song on this time of year as a protest against winter and as a plea for spring. It's called the February March. If you heard it before, well, you can sing along. If you haven't heard it before, grab your flugelhorn, march around your kitchen table, and enjoy the February March.
Today was awful cold, to say the least, and then the sun slipped out of sight. There ain't a fit night out for man or beast. We're gonna make our move tonight. We'll pick them off balls of our uniform. We'll get the white shirts stiff with starch. We'll get the polish for the flugelhorn and do the February March. We'll do an old man winterectomy. We'll march him right on out of town. We're gonna hang Jack Frost in effigy for bringing Mother Nature down. And in the air that goes like Novocaine,
hope you feel a little bit warmer now. That was the February March by Lou and Peter Berryman. A good tune this time of year. Hope spring comes soon. You're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen on KHOI-FM. You can also listen to the Donna Lana Kitchen, not just on noon on Tuesdays, but we are repeated 7 o'clock in the evening on Tuesdays. Or if you really cannot get enough of us, you can go to the KHOI website, khoifm.org. Go to the talk program, scroll down until you see Donna Lana Kitchen, go to our page, and you can see way too many shows for you to listen to via podcast, so poke on one of those and enjoy some of the past shows. We also have recipes there and a great picture of Donna and I. So thanks for your support. I already mentioned that the 2015 Iowa Ag Summit is going to be happening on March 7th, this coming weekend. That's the official thing that features some GOP presidential hopeful candidates. The election season is kind of starting to raise its head here in Iowa, so it's time to find out what some of these attendees have to say about our food systems. Also, and or, at the same time, on Friday, March 6th and Saturday, March 7th, there's another look at our food system. It's always good to have more than one way to look at things. There's more than one way to skin a cat. There's more than one way to peel an apple. So here's another one. There will be the 2015 Food and Ag Justice Summit put on by the Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement, and that is happening Friday, March 6th, Saturday, March 7th in Des Moines. Go to iowacci@iowacci.org for more information about that. And also, more stuff happening on March 8th, this coming Sunday. We talked about CSAs before. This is a CSA. There's a benefit event for Mustard Seed Farm. It's a local CSA here. And you can come to a square dance, pottery sale, silent auction, and soup supper. That's happening Sunday, March 8th from 4 to 7 at St. Thomas Aquinas Church here in Ames. You can go to mustardseedfarm.org for more information. Support that fine organization. Eat some good food, but come early. Come at 4 o'clock and come to a square dance. Get yourself an appetite going. So jump up and down, listen to some good music, because like I happen to know the people at Mustard Seed Farm also know their way around some fine fiddle music, too. That's good. And also another event coming up this weekend, Valerie Williams Commotion Dance Theater is presenting Bach Had 20 Children, a wonderful dance, March 6th and 7th, 7:30 p.m. in the Ames City Auditorium. You've been listening to Donna Lana Kitchen with special guest Liz Colby from PFI. And we heard about a orcharding workshop from Sean Brown from Seebeck Farm, who is a new orchard coming up there in Radcliffe. We've had engineering by Rick Morrison. You've listened to music by Liz Donaldson and Alex Mitchell from their CD called Summer Tunes, and also music by the Berrymans, the February March. My name is Lana Noctigal. Enjoy good food and enjoy life.